Hello and welcome to Natasha Explains It All. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about drug policy. But before we get into that, I wanted to share a little bit about the podcast itself. And the podcast is recorded on a platform called Spotify for Podcasters, and there are analytics that are available to me about who is listening to the podcast and where. So I thought it would be cool to share with you what those statistics are, where people are listening to the podcast. I find it interesting and I hope you will too. So listeners, thank you so much for listening. You have a global reach and your breakdown is as follows. 87% of listeners are based in the United States. 5% are in the UK. 2% are in Brazil. I would definitely like to increase that statistic. 2% are in France. 1% are in Portugal. 1% are in Italy. And then less than 1% are in Belgium, Colombia, and Canada, respectively. So very cool. The podcast has reached 3 continents so far. Would love to reach them all, though I'm sure Antarctica might be a little bit of a stretch. But thanks so much for those who are listening. And I just find that really interesting to know where in the world people are listening to the podcast. And if you would like to support the podcast, listening obviously is the most important thing, but you can also rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen to the podcast on. It really helps because of the algorithm. So the more that people rate it and review it, the higher it will show up in terms of search results. And also you can send in a voice note through Spotify, and you can also donate to the podcast through the link that is in the show notes for each episode. So I thought that that was kind of cool, and I wanted to, you know, to share that with you guys. And then one more data point to share with all of you before turning to the heart of today's episode. I don't know how accurate this is. I received an email recently from a representative from podstatus.com. And apparently, Natasha Explains It All, in Brazil, it has been ranking well in terms of Apple Podcast rankings for the Brazilian market. And apparently Natasha Explains It All is in 41st place in the politics category. Granted, I don't know how many podcasts are in the politics category, but I imagine it's far more than 41. So the fact that it's in 41st place seems kind of cool. Again, I don't know how legitimate podstatus.com is, but I thought that was a cool statistic, so I wanted to share that. Anyway, enough on the statistics front. Thank you so much for your support. And now let's talk about weed. All right, now why do I want to dedicate this episode to the legalization of marijuana? Well, a couple of things happened recently that have brought this to top of mind. And basically they come to an additional argument for legalization that I'd like to share with you, some food for thought as you think about it yourself, or maybe it comes up in conversation. So some additional information, an additional argument, an additional perspective that may be helpful to this topic. So the two things are, one is that the state of Ohio earlier this month, through a ballot initiative by the public, changed its law to allow for the legalization of recreational marijuana. And that means that Ohio is now the 24th state in the United States to legalize recreational marijuana. And DC has also legalized marijuana. So that means that a little over half of the population in the United States lives in a jurisdiction where the recreational as well as medicinal marijuana is legal. So this only suggests that the trend is going to continue in that direction, that more and more states will move towards legalization, And while it remains illegal at the federal level and would require an act of Congress to become legal at the federal level, certainly the Biden administration has signaled its support for, if not full legalization, certainly moving the classification marijuana from a Schedule 1 drug to a lower schedule, and so that that can impact how it is treated, because marijuana right now at the federal level is a Schedule 1 drug. As a Schedule 1 drug, it impedes the ability to even do scientific research about marijuana and its potential positive medical and other uses. So there are Schedule 1 is like the highest schedule. And so basically it's considered as having no legitimate uses, which we know is not true. And speaking of those legitimate uses, the second thing that happened recently, which is really the heart of what I want to get to. So go Ohio. That's great news. And then when it comes to the second point, there is a video series that I watch from time to time. It's called What's Underneath. It's hosted by a mother and daughter that have a company called Style Like You. And their What's Underneath series does interviews with various people, and they're very vulnerable interviews where the person who is being interviewed may be famous, maybe not, and talking about generally something quite difficult that happened in their life. And they didn't, and based on the name of it, What's Underneath, with each question that they ask, the person who is being interviewed removes an item of clothing. And so the idea is to promote vulnerability, and body positivity. Anyway, one of the people that they interviewed recently was a woman who on social media goes by a good witch. Her actual name is Shelly Rogers Johnson. So you can look her up on TikTok or Instagram at a good witch official. And in her interview, the topic of marijuana came up. So that's why this is relevant, because she was talking about that she had breast cancer. And as part of her pain management regimen, her doctor prescribed her OxyContin, which is an opioid, and has been one of the many opioids that have been that have contributed to the opioid epidemic in the United States. And OxyContin had a lot of very negative side effects for her, and she also knew that it was highly addictive. And so she went and talked to her doctor and, asked if she could get off of it, if there were alternatives available to her. And because she didn't want to get addicted to it, she wanted something that was less taxing on her system, as she was using this for pain management through cancer. And her doctor basically dismissed her concerns and basically told her to just take her medicine, you know, be a good girl. And she... being the person that she is, she did not take that no for an answer, found a different doctor, and also did her own research about how to deal with cancer-related pain management, and also how to get off of opioids, including oxytocin. And one of the recommendations was for marijuana. And so she started to use that and reported that it was much more helpful to her in her recovery. And that reminded me, which is the argument and the heart of this episode, about something, what her experience is something I have heard over and over and over again in the various interviews that I have done as an attorney. I do a lot of work in the criminal justice system as a lawyer, and I interview a lot of people who have had criminal court contact. And besides the fact that marijuana is still illegal and criminalized in many states, so there are many people sitting in jail and prison in the United States right now for marijuana, so just we have that as a baseline. So that needs to go away. That is ridiculous. Nobody should be incarcerated for marijuana. But in addition, the criminal court system actually helps perpetuate the opioid epidemic and helps to perpetuate the criminality of a marijuana use, not only because of what I was saying that, it, you know, like in the states where it is illegal, you can't use it, it's a crime, but even in the states where it is legal, by and large, if you have any criminal court contact, even if you haven't been convicted of anything, you are barred from using marijuana, even medical marijuana, even if you have a medical marijuana license. And the reason this happens is a control issue by the court and lots of other reasons regarding financial interests and other motivations that I won't get into at this time. But the point being that if you are arrested and charged with an offense in many parts of the country, even if your offense, even if the charges have nothing to do with drugs or alcohol, you will be prohibited from using drugs and alcohol. Even though those, for alcohol, for example, right? Alcohol is generally legal for all adults to consume. But if you have any criminal court contact, again, even if you haven't been convicted, even if your charges have nothing to do with alcohol, it is a very standard pretrial release condition. So if you're going to be in the, you know, released from jail while your charges are pending, it is a very standard condition that you cannot consume alcohol. It is also a very standard condition that you cannot use any drugs. And that includes, in many cases, marijuana, even in places where it is legal. And of course, if you're incarcerated, you cannot use alcohol and you cannot use drugs, though setting aside the fact that jail guards and prison guards are the number one contributors to funneling drugs into carceral settings and then using that to create black markets. But again, setting that aside, what often happens is someone who might even have a medical marijuana card or live in a jurisdiction where recreational marijuana is legal for adults, but then they are then prohibited from engaging in that legal activity because they now have criminal court contact, or they lose their medical marijuana license, even if they haven't been convicted of anything, simply because they have a criminal court contact. The judge prohibits them from using, their pretrial supervision officer prohibits them from using, their probation officer prohibits them from using. Maybe they have already been convicted and been released and they're living in a halfway house, can't use any substances there either. But what they can get access to, what they can use, are opioids, because those can be prescribed by a physician and are legal under all circumstances. And so I've spoken to many people who have told me that because of their criminal court contact, they were no longer allowed to use weed. And instead, what they were offered were opioids, whether it was Oxycontin or some other form of opioid. And the opioid was worse. It was much heavier on their system. It had much more serious side effects. It was far more addictive. And so what was easier on their system, which made them feel healthier and better, which was the marijuana, they couldn't get access to. And I even recall when I was working in DC, this wasn't a client of mine, but this was a client of someone who worked for a partner organization. And she had a client who, if I recall correctly, her client had PTSD and use medical marijuana to deal with PTSD, and had it managed, you know, was controlling it, was doing well, but then had some criminal court contact and then was prohibited from using medical marijuana, even though he was using it to manage a chronic condition, his PTSD. And so that ended up causing this horrible sequence of events where he regressed from the progress that he had been making because he wasn't able to access medication, the medication that he had been using. And so I just want to point that out, that another reason why it should be legal at both the state and federal levels is that our criminal court system, by it not being legal at the same level of, say, pharmaceutical drugs, is that it is actually helping to perpetuate the opioid epidemic, and it is helping to push pharmaceutical drugs that can be far more damaging and far more addictive and far more harmful to people than marijuana could be. And this is an argument to say that marijuana should not be regulated, or that it has no negative side effects, or that it should be unlimited use. No, of course, just like with alcohol or with tobacco or with any pharmaceutical drugs, right? There's supposed to be regulation and limits as to when you can use it, under what circumstances, when you cannot use it, right? Like, you know, when you're driving, for example, of course, you need to have all of those things. But it is deeply problematic that, you know, someone who has been using marijuana for whatever type of pain management or other health consideration, when they then have criminal court contact, is no longer allowed to access that and is instead pushed towards opioids. And then if they do use marijuana, that can send them back to jail because it's not considered legal by the court. Even if it is legal in the state, even if it is generally legal for adults to use it in that state, in many, many courts, in many, 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 many criminal courts, it's still considered prohibited, even if it is generally legal for the adult population to consume. And so I just want to throw that out there as another argument of our criminal court system is perpetuating the opioid epidemic by generally prohibiting people to have access to marijuana who are in the system, even if they haven't been convicted of anything. And so that is also an argument as to why legalization is insufficient, right? Because I'm saying that this is happening in the states where it's legal. In the states where it's illegal, people are being sent to jail all the time for weed, and that has to end. But even in the states where it's legal, people are still being punished because often it is a rule of the criminal courts that you cannot consume marijuana. But instead, you can have access to highly addictive opioids. Which is not the preference for many people, including, as I was mentioning, this woman named Shelley, the Good Witch, who was talking about her cancer treatment, as well as many of the people that I have spoken to who have been in the criminal court system and don't want to use opioids. They would prefer to use medical marijuana, but can't. And so that is a reason why legalization is not enough, right? We need there needs to be questioning, right, and changes in policy and law as to why the pharmaceutical drugs are pushed so heavily in comparison to these other treatments. Now, one of the contributing factors is the federal prohibition. Because marijuana is a Schedule I drug under federal law, that means it is considered to have no beneficial uses, which significantly interferes with the ability to do any type of scientific research about what helpful property or healthy properties it may have. And so legalization at the federal level is absolutely necessary to be able to free up federal dollars to do some of that research, to help level the playing field. And, you know, I could do a whole longer episode about, you know, the background of this and about how you know, the initial campaign to criminalize and demonize marijuana was, you know, about not wanting competition. The tobacco and alcohol industries didn't want competition. And so this was a campaign to get rid of the competition by, you know, demonizing it and criminalizing it. A very successful campaign that fortunately, you know, in the last several years has been chipped away at. But anyway, just another point for consideration about, as long as it is illegal, and even in places where it is legal, it is considered still inferior to other forms of treatments. We are creating a system where people are going to still be punished for it, and also promoting drugs that are potentially less safe, right? But they have significant lobbying interests behind them that keep them on the market, that keep them being the what is being pushed on people. So some food for thought about drug policy. Go Ohio, congratulations. I do hope that that will help motivate your neighboring states to move in that direction. And I do really hope that we can get to a point where no one is incarcerated in the United States for marijuana. And on that note, I'm going to wrap up for today. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next time.